unless you're a Saturday morning regular, or you've gone to longish retreats at Green Gulch, Tassajara, or Samish, you probably are not familiar with this poem we just chanted. So I personally did not get anything about this poem at all. My big question was, what does this have to do with Zen? It didn't really sound like any of the other poems or chants that we usually do. I like the images, the poetic images, the feel of it. I was drawn to herons in the moonlight, snow in a silver bowl, trapped rats, and so on. The rest was pretty much lost to me. And like I said before, I did not get any connection to Zen practice. So I was very happy to have another opportunity to revisit and study the Song of the Chohmira Samadhi. The big question, how do you explain a poem? How do you talk about enlightenment? How do you talk about experiences and states you have while you're sitting zazen? I still don't have an answer to that. So some of my responses and explanations are other poems or koans, which I don't understand either. So, but feeling-wise, it was the closest thing to poetry. So let's see how this goes. Some so-called facts. The Song of the Chohmira Samadhi is a sister poem to the Samdokai, the merging of difference and unity. So like it addresses suchness. Another so-called fact, when Dogen Zenji left his teacher in China, his teacher's name was Ryujing, he received two texts for his mission in Japan. One of them was the Song of the Chohmira Samadhi, and the other one was the Teaching of the Five Ranks. One wonders what made these texts so special that they were the two he received when he returned to Japan. So in general, it is believed that this poem was written by Dongshan, also known as Tungshan Lianqi in Chinese, or Tozan Ryokai in Japanese. So it's believed that he wrote the poem. For our lineage, Dongshan is especially important since he is one of the two founders of Soto Zen. He lived from 807 to 869. He is the 38th ancestor in our Soto Zen lineage, which puts him 10 generations after Bodhidharma. He lived at the same time as Nanchuan and my favorite sage, Zhaozhu. Dongshan was known for developing teaching tools or using them. I'm just going to name some, and they all seem to contain a number and another something. The three roads, the three falls, the three leaks, the four types of different kinds. The teaching of the five ranks. And the teaching of the five ranks is actually one that comes up several times in the Chohmira Samadhi. So this whole thing is more like a secret handshake than an explanation of our practice. The five francs are an expression of Mahayana worldview, and we will look at them in greater detail when they come up in the text. Now, to summarize, I'm sure you got that all, but a little summary was Dongshan says that the world is of two elements, sameness and difference. He also says that the relative and absolute, the two different elements are one. As soon as you say one, you cannot avoid the two. It's too late. Salvation lies in no thought that is freedom from discrimination. All things obey another. True nature and the phenomenal world are meeting here and now, expressed as your life. Now some words to the title. Chulmira Samadhi. We have encountered this mirror before in our studies, but under different names. In the Avatamsaka Sutra, it was the one true Dharma realm. In the Lotus Sutra, true nature. In the Nirvana Sutra, great Nirvana, or Buddha nature. In the Shurangama Sutra, it is known as the Tathagata Garbha. In the mind-only school, it is the Alaya consciousness, or great mirror wisdom. The mirror is our true self. It is precious and adorned with jewels, because no matter how long it has been hidden or covered with dust, it never loses the power or potential to reflect. Also, the jewel mirror is only in the present. Shunryu Suzuki said that a mirror does not keep the same image on its face. The image will always change, and it will be natural that it always changes according to conditions and the object that is right before it. Therefore, the Chulmira Samadhi points to a state in Zazen where the mind reflects things as they are. It, or we, embrace all things in their suchness and adapt ourselves without destroying ourselves or harming others. We transcend the dualism of love and hate and express ourselves as we really are, through creative thoroughness in daily life. So we could say that the jewel is our true nature and that the mirror objectively reflects true life. Samadhi means meditation, awareness, concentration. It is the unity of the meditator with the object of the meditation. The unity of true nature and enlightenment. Remember, at the moment of his enlightenment, the Buddha exclaimed, "How wondrous! All beings have the Tathagata's wisdom and virtue." In closer to our normal language translation, he is supposed to have said, "I and all beings have reached enlightenment." So if you still have the chant book, I'm actually starting with the actual poem now. The first lines are, "The teaching of thusness has been intimately communicated by Buddhas and ancestors. Now you have it, so keep it well. So I figured out why I didn't get anything about this poem, because that was the line I ignored. Kind of like the summary, the teaching of thusness has been intimately communicated by Buddhas and ancestors. So it's about the teaching of thusness, about the teaching of reality, the teaching of one and many, identity and mutuality. In the Pali canon, the Buddha said to Bahiya, "Then Bahiya, thus you must train yourself. In the seen, there will be just the seen. In the heard, just the heard. In the reflected, just the reflected. In the cognized, just the cognized." That is how, Bahiya, you must train yourself. Now, Bahiya, when in the seen, there will be to you just the seen, just the heard, just the reflected, and so on. Then, Bahiya, you will not identify yourself with it. When you do not identify yourself with it, you will not identify yourself therein. When you do not locate yourself therein, it follows you will have no here or beyond or midway in between, and this would be the end of suffering. Sounds pretty easy, doesn't it? But how often, instead of seeing what we see and hearing what we hear, we don't hear the other person, we hear as we are. We put a filter in between, we put layers in between. In the Mahayana tradition, thusness or suchness is a central notion. It refers to the absolute, to reality, the true nature of all things. It is formless, unmade, immovable, beyond concepts. Suchness, in a way, is the opposite of what is apparent, the opposite of phenomena. On the other hand, that is not quite correct, since suchness does include phenomena. It is present right now. Please note that the text does not say, someone just handed you suchness, or you just discovered it in a box or under a rock or something. It says, now you have it, so keep it well. And it says, now you have it. And it's quite sure about that. Because you've always had it, and you have it right now. And you've never been without it for a single moment. However, there is a slight possibility that vexations or obstructions or negative emotions or preconceived, whatever, cover up your Buddha nature quite thoroughly. The mirror is still there, unchanged. However, vexations may prevent the reflection. So the next lines are, filling a silver bowl with snow, hiding a heron in the moonlight. Taken as similar, they're not the same. When you mix them, you know where they are. This describes things that are somewhat similar at first glance. If you have snow in a silver bowl that is highly polished, you might not know exactly where does the snow end and the bowl begin. And a white egret does not stand out so much in the white moonlight. The moon and its light and the silver bowl are symbols for enlightenment or the void, the universal which will remain. Snow and the egret stand for phenomena, objective events, the particular, and they will arise and cease in their impermanence. At the same time, the snow shows the function of the bowl. The bowl's function is to contain something. And the heron shows the function of the moonlight, which is to illuminate. Enlightened beings see everything as one, but they can also make distinctions. There is interdependence and there is individuality. In contrast, when we operate from an unenlightened point of view, all we see is distinctions. Mine and yours, pleasure and pain, good and bad, right and wrong. So we may think in a way that this oneness is what we should be striving for, the exclusion of duality. But then it's also important to remember that if we see everything as one and there is no difference, there can be no relationship. If everything is one, there is no other to relate to. All right, the next lines. The meaning is not in the words, yet it responds to the inquiring impulse. Move and you are trapped. Miss and you fall into doubt and vacillation. Bodhidharma said, a separate transmission outside doctrine, not founded on words or letters, pointing directly to the human mind, seeing nature become Buddha. These lines explain how the actions of an enlightened teacher are to be guided by spiritual resonance. The teacher responds to the student. However, neither words nor actions should be routine or habitual. The response, the act, is according to causes and conditions and never apart from them. Once an act is completed, it dies to itself, never to happen again in the same way. Since causes and conditions and people always change. The use of language keeps on coming up throughout the poem. Ultimate truth, poetry, enlightenment cannot be put into words. At the same time, we have to say something. And words do point at it. Words are tools a teacher may use to point at the teaching. And if the students are lucky, they might bump into it and realize enlightenment. I actually found another translation of those two lines very helpful. Reiho Masunaga said, the Supreme Mind cannot be expressed by words, but it responds to the needs of the trainee. If you are enslaved by words, you fall into a hole. If you go against the truth, you come to a dead end. I find that actually easier to understand than our translation, which is the meaning is not in the words, yet it responds to the inquiring impulse. Move and you are trapped. Miss and you fall, into doubt and vacillation.
Could you say that translation, the other translation?
Sure. The Supreme Mind cannot be expressed by words, but it responds to the needs of the trainee. If you are enslaved by words, you fall into a hole. If you go against the truth, you come to a dead end. In the Sandokai, it says, hearing the words, understand the meaning. Another finger pointing at the moon. In case 19 of the Mumon Khan, Zhao Chu asks Nanchuan, what is the way? Nanchuan replied, everyday mind is the way. He also said, if you go towards it, you will stumble past it. So this koan is a great segue for the next two lines, which are, turning away and touching are both wrong, for it is like a massive fire. Just to depict it in literary form is to stain it with defilement. One can take the massive fire as the jewel mirror. If I think I see true nature, and I think I have found the precious mirror, this is the way, I found it. Now I just need to keep a desk grip on it, and I'll have it forever. I am stuck with what they call a false view of enlightenment. If I cling to the massive fire, I will burn. And if I reject it, I will freeze. Clinging to the idea of the precious mirror and the idea of I will stumble past it. In one of the commentaries, Sheng Yen says that enlightened persons become the fire, and that by becoming the fire, they are no longer disturbed by it. They do not even know they are the fire, but when someone needs the flame, they are ready to give it. The next lines, it is bright just at midnight, it does not appear at dawn. It acts as a guide for beings. Its use removes all pains. This it, which is bright just at midnight, obviously is not the light of the sun. It is the true mirror, our true nature. We don't practice to manifest our true nature, as we have established before. At the very beginning, we have it already. But we practice to eliminate our attachments, our hindrances, our obstructions, our vexations. Sheng Yen, during his commentary, The Infinite Mirror, he uses that word vexation throughout, and I think it's really a good word because it includes not only the big hindrance but also those annoying little habits we have and all these things we stick on our mirror so we don't see it. So, if practice does not affect our true nature at all, why do our ancestors and teachers talk at all about the dual mirror, self, nature, enlightenment. So one way of looking at this is sentient beings, most people, like me, I like having goals and attainments, benchmarks. Oh, I got this. Incentive. So by speaking of an enlightenment we can achieve, our teachers use skillful means. They're speaking of something that we can work towards and that may support us in our practice. So as long as this goal of enlightenment remains a goal we can identify, this carrot hanging in front of us, it's a sure sign we have not reached it. The goal, since it is non-attachment, will disappear once you reach it. Suffering also will disappear. There's your carrot. To go on with the poem, although it is not fabricated, it is not without speech. It is like facing a dual mirror. Form and image behold each other. You are not it, but in truth it is you. Form and image behold each other. You are not it, but in truth it is you. This is a reference to Dongshan's very famous enlightenment experience. Before Dongshan went on the long pilgrimage, he went to his teacher Yunyan and he asked, if after many years someone should ask if I was able to portray the master's likeness, how should I respond? Yunmen remained silent for a while and replied, just this person. Dongshan then left and went on pilgrimage. While crossing a river, he saw his reflection in the water. At that moment, he understood his true nature and experienced a great awakening. In his poem, his enlightenment poem, he said, seek nothing of others. How great a distance then do I stand apart from him. And now, going all alone, I meet him everywhere. My true self, and yet not I. Seeing this, you live in truth. Dongshan's off the question who was the true Dongshan for himself. Who is the true self, the true person? Usually we would say, this physical body is my, that's me. And this reflection is just the water. But Dongshan must have felt that the reflection also is the true person. One cannot exist without the other. And the reflection is always present, just without water or another reflecting surface, we don't see it. Maybe Dongshan saw that his physical body was not his true nature, but that his true nature also was not separate from it. One does not know a mirror exists until one sees the reflection. One does not see the reflection without the mirror. They are interdependent, not the same and not separate. This is the Chul mirror. I'm going to close for tonight at this point. Come back for the exciting installment number 2 next Wednesday. Thank you very much.